श्रीला गुरुदेव की जय, श्रीमन महाप्रभु की जय, श्री हरिनाम संकीर्तन की जय, श्री श्री गोनित्यानंद की जय, गौर भक्तवृंद की जय, गौर प्रेमानंद हरि हो। सो गुड मॉर्निंग टू ऑल ऑफ अस, थैंक्स सो मच फॉर योर प्रेजेंस हियर टुडे, प्रणाम। एंड इट्स माय अगेन ऑनर एंड गुड फॉर्चून टू have the darshan of so many Vaishnavas like all of you. So thanks for blessing my eyes. That's the perfection of the eyes, as the gopis will say as well. I remember recently I was visiting one special sadhu in Barsana, and some other special sadhu came to visit him. So it was interesting, special level of sadhuness. And the sadhu who was visiting told the other sadhu was deeply engaged in bhajan, and the visiting sadhu entrance, he was sorry to interrupt your bhajan. He said, "The fruit of my bhajan is to receive the darshan of the Vaishnavas." That's what I was hoping for the last 24 hours I was chanting, just to have this type of darshan. So somehow, by the mercy of my Guru Maharaj, some nice bhajan I must have been doing these last days to have the darshan of all of you now. So as Deva Mahaprabhu mentioned, I appreciate the point that he made on the necessary experience of chamatkar, which means basically astonishment. Rasa sar chamatkar. The very essence of the experience of rasa is chamatkar, this feeling of sacred wonder that we shouldn't lose it, hopefully any moment in our practice. That's how we eventually, officially, will reach the level of Bhakti Rasa, which is the ultimate goal to attain, even more specifically. Not Prem, but Bhakti Rasa. But how to reach to such a level of wonder, we have to, as we were speaking these days, be careful not to take Krishna Bhakti for granted, and do not lose our capacity of becoming astonished by all the different miracles that are still going on closer to what we can imagine. So the intention of sharing some thoughts on Gaur Lila, Gaur Katha these days, hopefully may render some service to the Gaudiya community in that direction, that we may not get fully like accustomed to, okay, yeah, I know Gaur Lila, Gaur Katha, Mahaprabhu, let's speak again. Let's try again. Let's see if we can squeeze some further chamatkar from all this. And we can realize, oh my God, all these same things I've been receiving from day one have so much juice. As we gave the example yesterday, I think. Sugar cane. I no longer remember which day I gave this talk. So too many lectures this last month. So we are continuing today into this exploration of diving into Gaur Lila and learning how to swim and float into such oceanic waters, very intense ones, very deep ones, very deep ocean, lots of jewels waiting us there in the depth of those oceans. So yesterday, I mean, of course, 2 days ago we spoke, inaugurated, if you will, that session by speaking about Brahmananda Rai, but yesterday we kind of more officially started to speak about Gaur Lila, Gaur Tattva, and the depth of that, and how Gaur Lila is the giver of the gift of Krishna Lila. Like Srila Siddhar Maharaj likes to say, first the giver, then the gift. No? Like you will put special gratitude and attention to the ones who gave you the gift, but also at the end of the day you realize, oh, Gaur Lila is also the gift. Gaur Lila is the giver of the gift of Krishna Lila, but when you go deep into the gift of Krishna Lila, you get the gift of Gaur Lila. So the giver, the original giver, eventually became the ultimate gift. That's how interestingly it plays out. So we share some ideas about this concept and how Mahaprabhu represents Paratattva Simma of the highest reach of the Absolute, Braja Krishna tasting those things that he was not able to relish in Vrindavan himself. So a new Leela was required, if you will, new, quote-unquote, for him to be successful, to make up, as my Guru Maharaj likes to say, to make up for the failure of Krishna Lila. That's what Krishna Das Kaviraj say in the fourth chapter of Adi Lila. Krishna is reflecting back and saying, there was something missing there. I need some encore appearance to make up for this, basically. So in Gaur Lila we found Krishna, as we said, going beyond the script, beyond his own script as Krishna, and entering into the shoes of Radha, Radha Bhava, Radha Prem. And Shyam Sundar becomes Gaur Sundar, and therefore we have this. Now Rasa will say it. He knows what I'm going to say.
Gold is the new shop. Black and black.
Gold is the new black. No? Gore is the new sham. No? So that was kind of the official slogan of yesterday's meeting. So then in Gaur Lila, Krishna is having this opportunity, this Parishista Lila, appendix-like Lila, in what Krishna is tasting, what he was not able to experience in Vrindavan. So of course it's an upgraded relishment, if you will, for Krishna there, but it's an upgraded blessing for us to enter in contact with Gaur Lila, and we are receiving something extremely special. So it's, again, it's important that we do not lose sight of, on a daily basis, recalibrate our level of appreciation of the nature of the gift we are receiving. I mean, there shouldn't be a day that we take rest from that exercise. No. Now today I don't need to further appreciate the nature of the gift I receive. Hopefully that day never comes. No? As Bhaktivinoda Thakur will pray, when that day will be mine, you can pray also, when that day will never come to my life. Oh my God, that day. But I think, today I don't think there's anything more to appreciate. That's a really needy day. You really need to go deeper on that day. So that's a nice blessing you may have. Okay, now I need to go deeper. So today I like to share some thoughts, also sharing some further notes that I've taken along these last 2 years after I finished my 1 year, last year. I finished my first book, and as I told you, I'm kind of more writing my second book in my mind now, although I'm supposed to be speaking now about the first one, but what to do? That's the problem with writing and all these creative processes. You are supposed to, like the musician who is supposed, he wants to share the songs from the last album, and everyone in the audience says, sing that hit from 30 years ago. I say, I'm tired of singing that one. I want to share the new song. No, we want the old one. I want to share the new song. So, some perspectives I would like to share today regarding Gaur Lila that I think are also quite user-friendly and relatable to our experience as sadhakas, because, I mean, Gaur Lila is all about being a sadhaka. Mahaprabhu is our sadhaka god, if you will. When God is a sadhaka, that's Mahaprabhu, basically. When he practices, becomes a practitioner, of course, not only a practitioner, but the most accomplished type of practitioner. So we have something to learn in the context of our own sadhakness, sadhakhood, if you will. No? So I'd like to speak today about certain ideas or notions, which of course require lots of unpacking, but at least some few thoughts on ideas like purpose, like need, like vulnerability and empowerment, with your permission, and how these play out in the context of Gaur Lila. How Mahaprabhu is God himself embracing all these deep values that we as sadhakas and as humans need to pursue to be successful in our journey. So let's begin with some words on purpose, which is a very important word. Purpose, meaning. And before going to Mahaprabhu, I go into another direction, but it's connected. Trust me. Which is, maybe you know him, the direction of Viktor Frankl. He's the one who has developed this system called logotherapy. And he wrote the famous book, Man in Search of Meaning. That's a very interesting one, just in case. Some literary suggestions here. And basically his whole system is about how real healing, a real accomplishment in life is obtained after... in connection to the idea of purpose and meaning. His main point is, actually the goal of life is not to be happy, he says, but to find meaning. If you find meaning, even in suffering, your life goes on. If you're happy and you don't find meaning in that, your life does not go on. And he, of course, he's walking the talk. As you know, he was prisoner in Auschwitz concentration camp, and he saw, the unseeable. He survived that, and he not only survived that, but developed this whole system, realizing the only way I can survive this horror is finding some meaning in that. Meaning not in the sense that justifying and promoting that, but for some reason I'm here in this particular situation, and there's some purpose to go through this. So, in Sanskrit, interestingly, the word purpose, one of the words for purpose, and if I'm mistaken, I'm happy that Ushwal Prabhu is close to me to correct my Sanskrit speculations here. But one word in Sanskrit we could use for purpose is artha. I passed the first test. He's biased to me, that's why he's saying
that. He's motivated.
I gave him some halava before the class, and he's saying yes to him. I know how to hook him. So the word artha can mean, of course, many other things. Can mean goal to attain, objective, but also can mean purpose. Now, interestingly, we, in the classical Vedic definition, have this idea of the purusharthas, or the goals of life. Dharma, artha, kama, moksha. For us Gaudias, we may say this so-called goal of life in one sense. I mean, they are goals of life, but in our ultimate prospect, that's not the everything in terms of purpose. That's my point. No? We are not to fully dismiss them. There is a place for these things. But for us Gaudias, you may have heard this idea of panchama purusharta. We have the four goals of life, dharma, artha, kama, moksha, and then you have the pancham, the fifth one, which is prem purusharta, prem prayojan, divine love. Which we can translate, sometimes prem is called parama purusharta, which means the supreme goal of life, if you will. But also, we are speaking about Gaur-lila. Don't lose sight that all this is in the context of Gaur-lila. So also, panchama param purusharta also can mean not only the supreme goal of life, but the goal of life for the supreme. No, the supreme has his own goal in life. No, he has his objectives. I mean, he has to fulfill some level of purpose. No, it's important to... We have that, he has that on another level, but I mean, Krishna is also a person. Don't forget that part, please. He's not only a theological concept in the book. He's a person willing to relate with you, with us. So param purusharta can mean the supreme goal of life, or param purusharta can mean the supreme's goal of life. No? And Gaur-lila is all about that, basically. What's the goal of life for the supreme person? And you may like, wow. I never ask myself that question. I'm too concerned about my own goal. And maybe it's not that supreme, but I'm still about some other artha, sense of artha. What to speak of the goal of life for the supreme? No? But I'm just showing the reach of Gaur-lila, no? Which are the questions that are in the background of Gaur-lila. No? God himself asking, no, who I am? Interestingly, we are pretty busy solving that question ourselves. Who I am? But Krishna is who I am. I'm seeing how Sri Radha is reacting to me, all that happens to her in relation to me. What's in me that makes her react like that? Who I am? Existential crisis in the life of the Absolute.
Who am I?
Yeah. And that gives us a result, Gaur-lila. Gaur-lila is the Absolute. My Guru once said, he's the Absolute doing psychoanalysis. Who I am, no? Solving my existential crisis. So, of course, what's the goal of life? What's param purusharta for us? Prem. What's param purusharta for Bhagavan?
Prem.
So we share a common goal in life. So many things in common with God. We have to get these common points so we can relate to each other as well. Of course, with this I'm not saying exactly on the same level, and I'm not saying we are, I mean, there's no difference between Bhagavan and us, I'm not saying such a thing. But it's interesting to think in these terms. Okay, our goal of life is divine love, and the goal of God's life is divine love. If you understand the nature of divine love, you will understand this is never exhausting. It's not that already I got divine love, so no need further doses of that. Right, the contrary. The nature of love is fulfilling and at the same time always increasing. So you can never have enough. If you someday tell me, Maharaj, I have enough prem, and say, you don't have a drop of prem. With all respect. No? But that's not the nature of prem. No, the one who has prem will say, I don't have a drop of prem. That's what Mahaprabhu say. Na prema kandosti darapi harome. In me, there is not even the aroma of prem. Like if you have in a little box some camphor, but there's no longer camphor, there's just the aroma. Mahaprabhu said, not even that is in me. But when you see Mahaprabhu's example, nobody exhibited the symptoms of prem that he exhibited. So again, you have to harmonize the apparent paradox. Objectively, he's the topmost exhibitor of prem. Prem Purushottam, Sri Chaitanya Dev. Subjectively experienced, he feels, if there's someone who has less prem than anyone, that's me. Mm-hmm. I mean, Mahaprabhu is not making a show there. He's really feeling that. But because he feels that, he attains a higher level of prem. And there's no end to that. So when I say that Krishna's goal in life is prem, I'm not implying that he has no prem, that he has not attained that. Do you follow my point? I mean, we say our goal in life is prem because we don't have prem. But the one who has prem becomes a goal in their life in its own way. Because of attaining prem, prem keeps being the goal of your life, basically. That goal is such a goal. That's such purpose, artha. Remember, we're speaking about artha, which can mean goal and which can mean purpose. So the purpose... Prem is so purposeful. Such purpose is so purposeful that it's always a goal that can be further attained, basically. Mm-hmm. A further becoming, as I like to say, a further becoming in eternity. I have prem, I can have more prem, and I can have more prem, and there is no end to that. Mm-hmm. That's how the lila is going on eternally. I mean, that's why Radha and Krishna are not getting bored after doing apparently the same thing every single day. No? When you study the Astakaliya Lila, you may feel every day, at every time of the day, they're doing the same thing. Rasa Lila every night. It doesn't get bored after eternity. It does not, because prem is always increasing. So prem is always increasing. You can keep doing the same thing externally. Of course, there is some external varieties also, but hypothetically speaking, you can do the same thing for eternity, but if you have prem, it's always new. Anurag, everything becomes refreshed, updated. Remember when I heard that Bhaktivinoda Thakur's eternal service as Kamala Manjari was to prepare comfort lamps for eternity. I thought, okay, I'm not ready for that. Imagine if any of you can say, Maharaj, can I do some service? Yes, well, you can do comfort lamps. Okay, and you do comfort lamps, I don't know. For an hour? Or something else? Yeah, you can do comfort lamps. 3 hours? Anything else to do? We need more comfort lamps. And after 5-6 hours, you are nervous. You're wondering, what's going on? Something wrong is going on here. What if I tell you, for eternity, comfort lamps? I'm not saying that Bhaktivinoda Thakur is not doing anything else, but that's the main seva. And again, for us, it may sound like, you are not temple president or something in Cologne?
Camphor lamp.
Do camphor lamp.
Except for me, camphor lamp sounds good.
Okay. He's having a glimpse of his eternal prospect. So doing camphor lamps for eternity doesn't sound as fancy, basically. But the point is, if you have prem, there is no end to that service, if you will. Yeah, that's the point. Fancy, prem is the fancy thing, if you will. Makes everything most attractive. You can remain doing comfort labs forever. So it's important to try to, as sadhakas here, gradually get closer to that ideal, not just when I will finish doing this, when I will finish doing that, because sometimes we may conduct ourselves and say, well, like, okay, how many rounds are remaining? And you're not chanting, you're counting. And you're just thinking, when I will stop, which the nature of the goal is, this will never stop. Kirtaniya sadahari. Remember that line. That's forever. Nityam bhagavata sivaya. Satatam kirtayantumam. Katayantashtamam nityam. I can be 1 hour quoting all this line. Sada, nityam, satatam. Forever, forever, forever and ever. So, again, we cannot imitate that, but we should conduct in sadhana in such a way that we are getting a taste for that and not a distaste, cultivating and subconscious, like, as soon as I can finish, the greatest. No, that won't take us to Goloka, basically. So again, the goal of life is prem, but prem is of such a nature that you can always keep attaining prem. Prem is not just like static, monolithic thing, like, okay, it's there, attain. What else now? Further prem. Further prem. So in that sense, we have this concept of transcendental dissatisfaction. No, it's not that I get prem, okay, that's all. No, you can get more. So that satisfaction will, dissatisfaction will tell you to more. I like to share some verses from Brihad Bhagavatamrita in this connection. Very interesting. which describe this all-expanding nature of divine love. Especially how it applies in the life of God himself. So once, Narad Muni, this is Brihad Bhagavatamrita 1.7, verses 135-139. Narad Muni is asking Krishna for a boon. Very unique boon, as you will see. So Narad saying, may no one ever feel he or she has enough of your mercy, your bhakti, or prem for you. He requested for that mercy, for that blessing, for all of us. Not for him, but he included in the equation. May no one ever feel that they have enough bhakti, prem, mercy. In other words, may they keep appreciating the real nature of bhakti, prem, and mercy, which is there's never enough. Not because you are ungrateful and you're asking for more, but because you're really appreciating that and that takes you to more. So that's in itself pretty interesting request. But Krishna's reply to that is even more astonishing. There's more chamatkar in that, if you will. So Krishna will reply, the benediction you ask is meaningless. Since the very nature of these items is dissatisfaction. That should be simply obvious, Krishna is saying. Simply obvious. So, although my pure devotees have fully received my mercy and can deliver the whole world, none of them is ever satisfied. So therefore, please ask from me some other more satisfying benediction. Bas, next question. So interestingly, Krishna is saying here this idea. That's the nature of prem. You won't be satisfied. But there's, of course, that's not the type of dissatisfaction we feel before prem. No? You have to understand that. No? Prabhupada told us, chant and be happy. He tricked us. In that sense. I mean, we will be happy, but there's a transcendental dissatisfaction in the context of that happiness. We have to enter into that nuanced perspective. What does it mean to be happy? Because we may repeat the slogan, chant and be happy, but we may have our own idea. What does it mean to be happy? And we have our own idea. What does it mean to chant? And we have our own idea what's going on in between these two words.
The and.
Chant and be happy. I would say between the two we have to include the brackets with many considerations to have in place. So our chanting can really make us happy, because if that's not going on, then we need to have in place some other things. I remember once my Guru Maharaj was giving a lecture, a speaking about all these things. And someone say, why all this complicated stuff? Why not just chant and be happy? And he asked, are you doing that? You are just chanting and you're happy? You don't need to do anything else apart from chanting, like Haridas Thakur standard? 3 lakhs per day? No need to sleep, eat and work and all that. So chant and be happy. I said, no, I cannot do that. And that's why I'm speaking all these other things as well. So eventually you can chant and be happy. That, of course, that's the idea. So Krishna is replying in this unique way to Nara. The benediction you are asking, not happening. The nature of these things is always expanding, always more. Krishna himself experienced that transcendental dissatisfaction. He's called Swadhana Atriktam in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, which means he whom after giving himself to his devotee still feels unsatisfied, feeling, I've not given enough. That's Krishna's humility, if you will. He's not feeling, I've given everything. He's feeling, I've not given enough. They are given so much, I've not given enough. So my point is, if this criteria of transcendental dissatisfaction applies to quote-unquote ordinary prem in relation to ordinary jivas, quote-unquote, what to speak of God himself tasting prem, and how much this very same principle applies. And that's why we have Mahaprabhu, which is Krishna, dissatisfied, if we will, on some level of experience and wanted to taste something more. And that what makes him to be Mahaprabhu, trying to immerse himself into the depths of Radha Bhav, trying to find himself in the ocean of Prem and discover new purpose to his life, if you will. In this connection, one verse comes to mind also that I'd like to share. Famous verse, very nice verse from a section of verses in the ninth canto of the Bhagavatam, very nice section, important one, when actually Narayan is speaking, the famous story of Ambarish Maharaj and Durvasa Muni, and when Durvasa reaches the pearly gates of Vaikuntha, if you will, and asks to Narayan, please help me, save me. And Narayan said, I cannot do anything. You have to go to Ambarish, basically. And before saying go to Ambarish, he actually, when Durvasa is asking forgiveness, how does Bhagavan replies? He starts to speak about how he loves his devotees and how he's controlled by his devotees. So by Paroksha Bhat, in direct speech, he's saying, you have to go to him. I cannot forgive you. It's like if I slap Ujjwal in the face without him deserving that. He can't deserve that, so that's another thing. But not publicly, then we can meet in the But if he's not deserving that, I won't go and say Narasa sorry for slapping Ujjwal in the face. He would say, no, go to Ujjwal. You have to deal with him, not with me. I have nothing to do. So Bhagavan was telling to Durvasa, go to Ambarish. You know? So one of these verses, which begin with the famous verse, Hambhakta Paradino Yasratan Trivadija Sadhuvir Grastari Dayo Bhakti Bhakta Jana Priyaha, where Bhagavan is saying, basically, I'm totally under the control of my devotees, I do not belong to myself, I'm totally dependent, although I'm famous all around by being independent. Again, now I'm going a little bit further than that, and actually beyond my independence is my dependence on my devotees, and so on. And then he said, Nahamad Mananasa se Sadhuvir Madhvaktair Sadhuvir Vina Sriyam Chatyantikam Sriyam Chatyantikam Brahman Jesam Gatirahamparam. So he's basically saying there, for those sadhus for whom I'm the only destination, I do not desire to enjoy my own opulence nor my own transcendental bliss. So I do not desire to enjoy myself without my devotees, Krishna is saying. I mean, you take out my devotees, Krishna is saying, I'm no longer there. That's not me anymore. Something like that. If you take bhakti or bhaktas from Krishna, You have only the app. In other words, let me be more abstract. If this is not enough, if you take the Shakti from the Shakti Mam, if you take Swarup Shakti from Shakti Mam, you have Brahman.
Yeah.
Undifferentiated absolute. No form, no variety, no movement, no loving exchange. So if you take Bhakti from Bhagavan, hypothetically speaking, Krishna becomes Brahman. For us, with all respect, a more comparatively boring version of the Absolute. But Krishna, the God we worship, he's basically implying, I mean, I offer myself for the sake of my devotees. And of course, if Krishna says this, I offer myself for the sake of my devotees, the ultimate implication of that is Mahaprabhu. Because as Mahaprabhu, Krishna is literally leaving his, if you will, his self aside to enter into the shoes of Sri Radha. He's leaving aside, I am Krishna, to experience what she is about. For the sake of what she's experiencing and trying to honor that. So that's interesting because the verse I just quoted is spoken by Narayan in Vaikuntha. So you hear this verse and say, wow, I mean, it's not Krishna in Vrindavan. It's Narayan in Vaikuntha has that standard. I give myself to my devotees in that way. So the idea, if you follow Kaimutya Nyaya, is if Narayan in Vaikuntha is saying this, what to speak of Krishna in Vrindavan, how much more, if you will, that's the idea of Kaimutya Nyaya, how much more he will say this very same thing. So again, anyhow, going back to Mahaprabhu for a moment, Mahaprabhu represents Krishna's Param Purusharta, the supreme attaining, his supreme goal of life, attaining final purpose, attaining Radha Bhava, and as we say yesterday, as the Ganga descends from the Himalayas and attain final place of, how do you say, resting in the Ganga, in the ocean, in the Ganga Delta. So in the same way, Krishna Lila comes from the Himalayas, Bhagavatam is revealed there in Badarik Ashram, and flows and reaches Navadvip, Krishna Lila attains fulfillment in Gaur Lila, basically. Krishna attains the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as we say, attained fulfillment in Mahaprabhu, who I like to call the Supreme Personality of Krishna. And the word supreme is in itself interesting, because supreme,
suprema.
In Spanish we say suprema, literally. The word su in Sanskrit is like very, sudurlava, supreme. So for someone to be supreme, that person has to be tasting the a very prem, a very much degree of prem, if you want to put it like that, supreme. So Krishna is supreme, he's tasting something, but as Mahaprabhu, he's tasting something else. So he's the supreme of the supreme, in the sense that there's another type of prem, which is very much hankered by him, longed for by him, which is Radha's prem, which makes Krishna who he is. As Srila Prabhupada likes to say, Krishna is beautiful, he's all attractive, but without Radha next to him, he's not that attractive. He makes that point. Of course, Krishna is beautiful, but the closer you get his Shakti, the personification of Bhakti next to him, that's the Krishna we worship. We don't want Krishna in the altar by himself, basically. If you put Krishna himself, he will be looking like, where are my devotees? No. Why you left me alone here? Where, did I do something wrong? I'm just guys here. I feel like just show the time into a mortar started now. I'm here like... So basically that's the God we worship. Supreme. So as Mahaprabhu, Krishna is absorbed in tasting this unique experience of Radha Bhava. Sometimes I like to think of Mahaprabhu as Krishna in the laboratory, as a scientist and making this new experiment called Gaur Lila. Let's see what it means to enter into Radha's shoes and experience that. That's a pretty heavy experiment. As we know, Sri Radha will tell him, you don't have an idea what you're asking for. When you go through that experience, you will be rolling on the ground, you will be smashing your face on the walls, You see Mahaprabhu in Gambira, that's gore. Not gore, but gore. Blood oozing from the pores. And it's like, oh my God, what's going on? It's scary. No? I mean, you have to properly understand that because you may feel like, I don't want that. Yeah. I remember one person that met the Buddhists and then got to know all this and became a Buddhist. He told Chami, I don't want to end like that. Like, bleeding and smashing my face on the wall. So better go to Nirvana. No? And that's everything is quiet. There's nobody there, but at least... there's no suffering because there's nobody, but at least there's no suffering. He goes, I don't want to smash my face on the wall like that. He misread this background. No? So the point is... Mahaprabhu is Krishna in the laboratory again, doing this intense, interesting experiment of tasting Radha Bhava. As any good scientist will be someone very passionate about his or her pursuit. So Krishna is really serious into pursuing Radha Bhava. If he plays really hard. He immerses himself in play. I mean, that's the very idea of Leela. Now, when you play, Leela means play. And when you really immerse in play, you forget everything. You forget all designations, all responsibilities. That's who you are in play. So that's God. God in Vrindavan, he's forgotten and God is immersed in play. Don't come to him and tell him, hey, you're God. No, this happened in Brihad Bhagavatamrita also. That's a very nice section where at one point Narada Muni approaches Krishna and asks him, he says, oh, Bhagavan, because Narada Muni has Aishwarya Gyan, so he will ask to Krishna, okay, you are Bhagavan. I'm curious, in those moments that you have to deal with so many demons in Vrindavan, since you were a three-day baby with Putin and so on, you dealt with so many demons, so I'm wondering if you experienced any difficulty in going through all this, I mean, hardships. Imagine you are a three-day baby and you have to deal with a putana. To begin with. That's the beginning of a whole series.
Number one.
Yeah. So Narada Muni was like inquiring, did you go through any type of hardship? And Krishna was like, no. I don't know. And Narada Muni like further inquires, but are you sure? Any type of hardship, difficulty? And Krishna said, well, not that you insist... Something comes to mind. There was some real difficult moments for me in the midst of the Leela. And I say, which moment? Mm-hmm. I say, those moments where devotees like you came to me and started to praise me, remind me, or Supreme Godhead, origin, everything. That was really difficult. That was real tapasya. I was immersed in my play, and you came there to remind me, you're God. And Narada Muni was like, oh my God. Why I asked that question. So, which was the topic before this example? Mm-hmm. Immersion in play, lost and found in Parikata. Yeah. So in Gaur Leela again, Krishna is immersing in this particular play and trying to find himself. Anew, if you will, there. As we say the other day, when we were speaking about Brahma Stuti, Brahma got an idea of Krishna, but when he went to Vrindavan and saw the bhakti of the Vrajavasis, he realized, oh, I think I'm getting to know another Krishna here. I didn't knew the full picture of Krishna till I met the Vrajavasis. Mm-hmm. Same thing happened with Uddhav. When he went from Dwarka after being Krishna's personal intimate friend and minister there, he goes to Vrindavan and realizes, I thought I was an intimate servant of Krishna. Now I'm realizing I was not. This is real intimacy. So similarly, we could say after, in the same way that Brahma and Uddhav recognized Krishna after visiting the Braj, he was more than what they thought. We could say, something similar happens to Krishna himself. When he gets closer and closer to Radha's heart and experience, and he has a glimpse of what she's feeling and how she's seeing me, what she's seeing herself in me, I do not know that. What's that? So he himself is realizing, I'm discovering a new Krishna by getting closer to the heart of Radha. I mean, you can have that experience here as well. If you have someone that really loves you, that person will know things about you that you don't know. That person may see things and point things about you that you are not able to see, but they are there. But their love is the thing that is seeing. The love is the lens to point at those things. So that's Krishna is also part of that equation, in a higher level, of course. So again, Krishna is realizing Sri Radha is having an experience of me that is unknown to me, and I want to who I am through the eyes of her love. Basically, in brief, that's the question of Krishna: who I am through the eyes of her love. It's not from a narcissistic pursuit, like I want to know myself, for the sake of myself, and I'm in mind, I'm a mate, and so on. Krishna doesn't have that type of ego. But he wants to see himself in the context of how Radha loves him. So this creates this deeper necessity in Krishna, deeper sense of purpose to be attained. I want to rediscover myself. That should happen to us as sadhakas. Again, I'm trying to make this parallel on some level with us as practitioners. We think we know ourselves. Don't take that for granted. Don't take yourself for granted. Do not be so sure, I already know who I am. Don't be open to seeing all that you can be by the eyes of those who love you. Generally, the way we see ourselves, generally, many times is not that generous. We don't have a clue about our whole prospect. So we see ourselves according to what we can see. But when we meet a sadhu, they will see us according to all that we can become. That's a much broader perspective. It gives much more hope. Sometimes we get too much concentrated on one shadow of ourselves, and that's the all in all, and that's how we get discouraged and depressed. And the sadhu will see beyond that cloud and see all your potential and say, oh, you can become all that. And they will just consider you in consideration to what you can become. That's the generosity of the sadhu, at the Mahaprabhu himself. In this world, people will judge you according to what you even done 30 years ago. No? Do you know Jai Nitai? Oh yeah, I know him. 25 years ago he said this, he did that. I know him. There is no chance for him to change, to grow. No, he was stuck 3 decades ago. Yes. That's all that he can be. That's not much generous, basically. So be careful to think like that, because if you don't want to be seen as such, be careful of seeing others as such, for sure. A little bit more generous perspective is, I'm not judging you according to what you did, but I'm judging you according to what you are in the present. No. Yeah, I know the Madhava. He's this, that, that. I'm not judging him according to the past, but at present he's this. That's what the Madhava is. That's more generous, but we could be more generous even with Deva Madhava. He's so generous with us, let's be more generous also. And the more generous perspective, of course, is I'm not judging you according to what you were, not even to what you are, but to all that you can be. Even though if at present you are a disaster, you have a bright potential. The bright potential remains there, no matter how embarrassing your present moment is. And that's how the sadhu is approaching us. And that's totally humbling, for sure. Try to imagine. You are in your worst possible moment, and the sadhu will just come and see the light at the end of the tunnel, if you will, and point, I see you there. No? That's one of my favorite quotes from Srila Siddhar Maharaj. He once said, and this is a very simple quote, but coming from a significant person, he said, your future is brilliant. That was a quote. But try to imagine coming from someone who is really seeing all that you can be, your future is brilliant. No more need to discouraging and depression and, oh, I have this anartha and that anartha and blah, 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 blah. You can have all the anarthas you want, but... and I know you may like to have some of those, yeah. But, oh my God, I mean, Mahaprabhu's mercy is more powerful than all your anarthas put together. Shigornitinandiki, Jai. So no matter. I mean, you bring all your anarthas together in one single plate. All of you put them together. I also add to the equation. I put mine there as well. Pile them up them. Still, Gaur's mercy, Sadhu's mercy is way more powerful than that. So that's the way we have to deal with anartha nibriti, basically. Amen. We are mostly concentrated on the power of mercy. Yeah. And that will take care of all my unwanted side, if you will. So, anyhow. Again, I lost track of my topic, but it's okay, no problem. So, Mahaprabhu is considering us from that generous perspective. You are only to be seen according to all that you can be. Again, but for you to receive such a generous glance, we have to reciprocate seeing others in that same way. If you do not see others in that same way, please do not expect to be seen in that way. It's not fair. No, it's not just. We're having some soundtrack. I mean, I'm not complaining, I'm just mentioning that. Okay. So.
Basement.
Sorry?
It's in the basement.
Okay. So, so Mahaprabhu is, again, it's Krishna in this needy moment, if you want to put it like that. Krishna has a deep need. I want to taste Radha. So he's in need. There's place for need in the life of God. And in that sense, we can connect him with the notion of vulnerability, which is a word that sometimes we need to incorporate more than often. No? To be vulnerable doesn't mean to be weak, no? But to open ourselves for empowerment, basically. That's the key to real empowerment, to be vulnerable in front of the proper person, of course, in proper environment. We open ourselves, we... Make ourselves naked. Thank you so much. And in that way, we open ourselves for input, if you will, empowerment. So that's Mahaprabhu. Mahaprabhu is Krishna in his most vulnerable moments, but at the same time, Mahaprabhu is the most volcanic face of the Absolute. I mean, he has been compared literally to a golden volcano of divine love, making eruption and its lava, consuming everything on its way. That's how he has been poetically depicted. Try to imagine. No? Prem-like eruptions. No? But he's Krishna in his most needy moment. So that needy moment, that vulnerability, is making him so volcanic, so empowered. So please try to connect these dots. Necessity, vulnerability, volcanicity, and empowerment. No? There's place for that. Not only in Krishna and Mahaprabhu, but in us as sadhakas. So we're speaking today. No? When you expose yourself with, again, the most embarrassing thing that is accompanying you at present in the proper direction, the result of that will be empowerment. Empowerment. Not only relief from whatever is torturing your mind, but you will receive so much input that will fill you with hope. Again, your future is brilliant. So we need those experiences. I mean, if we don't have those epiphanies, I mean, we won't make it. So we will navigate our Bhakti project on the strength of this type of historical moments in our timeline that you look back and you remember. Okay, that moment, and probably those moments are the most difficult moments of your life when you knew what to do in that moment. You go to the Gita, you go to Bhagavatam, I mean, Parikshit was not in a pretty easy situation. Arjuna was not in his comfort zone. So all these great treatises are spoken outside of the comfort zone. And real learning comes from that. I mean, we are deriving so much life from that. But we need to enter into that space, inhabit that vulnerable space, and so much will come from that. So there's a charm in vulnerability. Again, we worship a vulnerable God, if you want to, a human-like God. God pierced by the arrows of Cupid. Again, this is not making him less. This is making him more. if something is totally vulnerable, it's boring. I heard one example in that connection coming from the US here. No? You have here this famous series of Superman. I mean, maybe they're not so famous now, but maybe one century ago or something, they were famous. And you have these comics of Superman, and I got to know that in the very beginning years of the comic, Superman was depicted as totally invulnerable. Totally, absolutely, nothing, Superman. Nothing could do anything to him. And he was so invulnerable that people started to lose interest in reading the whole thing. He was too perfect.
He's just going to win.
No? Always winning, always defeating. I mean, boring. So people started to stop reading the series more and more and more and more and more. So the ones who were creating the series thought, what should we do about this? Let's make him vulnerable. On some level. So this, what's the name?
Kryptonite
came into the picture. So now Superman is vulnerable. And everyone started reading it again much more. Because, of course, as humans, they were able to create an emotional bond. And, oh, okay, I can relate to that. He's still Superman. I mean, pretty extraordinary, but we have something in common. Something. We are vulnerable. So we worship a vulnerable God, Nara Lila, in a transcendental sense, not in the same type of vulnerability, but we need to connect, bond emotionally with Krishna Lila, Gaur Lila. It's human-like Lila. Prabhupada used the term human-like. The two words are important, human, but also like, which like means it's not the same human experience as you think it is. But there is the word human as well. Don't be careful of not losing sight of the humanity of the Lila. Divine humanity. Divine, my Guru Maharaj likes to call it divine humanism. That's what you find in the Lila. So, anyhow, Tom, I have some minutes? Okay.
Hours.
Eternity is on our side?
Yes.
Still? Hours. Okay. Yeah, but today I know that Prasad is waiting at the end of the class, so that's a consideration also.
People can go eat, Maharaj.
Okay.
Walk of shame.
Now they won't, because you're on your side.
So we have needs, God has needs, different needs, but ultimately as Vaishnavas, as Gaudiyas, we're starting to get this idea. Okay, I have an existential crisis, but God is having an existential crisis as Mahaprabhu. And the final way to solve my existential crisis is assisting him in solving his existential crisis. No? Being willing to assist him in his divine necessities. But that's Lila. I mean, you want to go to the Lila and serve Krishna for eternity. What's the meaning of that? It means there's needs on a daily basis there, and you are expected to fulfill those needs in service. If you are not going there with the idea of there's some need here, there's nothing to do. And you will go to Vaikuntha in Santa Rasa. That's in standard in Vaikuntha, just sit and cool. Because no need, there's Bhagavan Narayan, he's self-satisfied, he doesn't need anything. So I can remain for eternity sitting on one corner in Vaikuntha, which doesn't have to be even in the near proximity of Narayan. Salokya Mukti. Salokya means you are in the same planet as Narayan, but not necessarily close to him. Narayan is somewhere, it's cool to be in the same planet as God. For some, that's enough. I'm in the same planet of God. Great.
You made it.
You made it. But you are sitting there just absorbed in meditation. No need to do anything else. But that's not our standard. If you read the dynamics in Krishna Lila, Gaur Lila, I mean, hard work. From morning, everyone, churning butter and the cows and doing this, so many practical stuff. We need managers there as well. You will need to take a rest eventually, yeah, I know. But my point is, there are needs there. And we are expected to go there, identify with those needs. It's not that, okay, Krishna has needs, let someone else fulfill them. I just want to take rest in Allah. You will be thrown to Vaikuntha there. Yeah. That's not the place here. Here we worship a needy person. Krishna is so needy, as I said the other day. When someone asked Nanda Maharaj, Uddhava say, maybe your son is God. I know who is God, say Nanda Maharaj. He's not. He's self-satisfied. He's peaceful. That's not Krishna. Mm. He's the opposite of that. He's so needy. He wants this. He wants that. He wants this. He wants that. And I'm there to provide that. Basically, he's implying with that. So if you start to grasp, if you hear the descriptions of the Leela, and that's a very important point of Raga Bhakti, you have to follow the mood there, you start to identify, there's so much need here. So many directions. So much emotional concern for the necessities of the Leela, and I want to enter there for eternity. I will have some work to do there. I prepare for that. Better I identify with that. And as we mentioned the other day, I'm sorry if this is sounding too extreme, but that's reality, ultimate reality. On a daily basis, Radha and Krishna have to meet each other without most of Braj knowing that. So that's a requires pretty much, how to say, dexterity for that to happen, especially midday, middle of the day. I mean, everyone is there, you have to manage for that to happen. And they are dying in separation from each other. This is not just poetry. They are dying in separation. They are dying, literally. And dying means you need to save the life of that person. So the ones on the group of Krishna are totally identified. Krishna is dying in separation of Radha. We have to save Krishna's life. And the ones in the group of Sri Radha are thinking, our Swami is dying in separation from her Prananath. We need to save her life on a daily basis. And somehow or other, you will project in Braj to enter one group or the other. So eternally, apart from doing camphor lamps, one of your services will be to save the lives of Radha and Krishna on a daily basis. Have you thought about that? That's not a cheap thing. And you better you prepare for that. It's not just, it's okay, you will meet Krishna. Mm. Have hope. And I go to rest. No, you have to. You have to be there. Every single day they have those needs. Those are real needs. The ones that arrive out of love. Mm. When you don't have love, you may have needs, but they're not that serious, that deep. They're like kind of a joke. If you compare Radha and Krishna dying in separation from each other, and you say, I need a new fancy car, I mean, what degree of need, real need, is that one? You may be dying for that. But these are real needs. So, as I like to say, and we are, I mean, what does it mean to attain that situation, a position of service there? Means we have to obtain a spiritual identity. And a spiritual identity comes out of spiritual identification with a particular need of service in the Leela. There is some need of service, I identify with that, and identity comes as a result of that. If you are not identified with a necessity of service, there's no identity coming. When we speak about spiritual identity, it sounds fancy, but and it is, but but we have to understand what's the meaning. How do I reach there? How I'm constructing that here and now, if you will. What I'm doing for that to happen. And that means you have to identify with a particular service, need of service, that I may... It's so needy that requires my presence for eternity. It's not something, I need you for 5 minutes and then you can have a break for 3 decades or something. I need you for 5 minutes, and then for the next 5 minutes, and then for the next 5 minutes, and you're always there. No? That's when you study, I don't know, Radha's dynamics, and you see the manjaris are always with her. But they are married, technically speaking. But you wonder, when are they with their husband? Because they are 24/7 following Sri Radha. Because why? Because she has so much need. She requires constant assistance, support, and so on. So anyhow, I don't want to overwhelm any of you with these ideas, not to discourage anyone, just to better we prepare to enter that ground. And the preparation is here and now. Starting with Tri Guru and the Vaishnavas and receiving service and trying to foster our identity as as we were speaking some minutes ago with Namras and Karuna Sindhu, we can be, one thing is to be a disciple, another thing is to feel myself as a disciple. Mm. No? Because we can take, I am a disciple as an, I've acquired this extra label. Mm. So now I'm a disciple. But you have to feel yourself as a disciple. You have to live, that's who you are, that's our identity. We want to be that forever. So we have to gradually increase our commitment with this type of call, if you will. So again, in connection to Krishna and Vrindavan, Radha and Krishna and Vrindavan, there's a very specific need of service with Mahaprabhu and Navadu. So there's a very, the more specific the description of God we receive, the more detailed the service necessity will be. Mm-hmm. To follow. That's interesting because, for example, in some traditions, they don't have a clear idea of who God is. Mm-hmm. And therefore, they don't have a clear idea of what they will be doing with God in eternity. And maybe they just project what they like to do here, there. Mm-hmm. No? Which may be more similar to a notion of hell than heaven. I like to drink vodka all day, so heaven means I will be able to do that without getting drunk. without having to without pay the consequences. Yeah, exactly. Horrible. So that doesn't sound like heaven. It's just like you are just extending your potential for exploitation eternally. Mm-hmm. That sounds more like hell than heaven. But since people doesn't have a clear idea of who God is, they don't have a clear idea of what I'm supposed to be doing there. So they just project what they like to do here or there. Yes. But the clearer the idea of God becomes, correspondingly, the clearer becomes who I am there and what I'm supposed to do there. And in our tradition, we have the clearest definition of God. I mean, you have so much level of details that is astonishing. The other day I was speaking with a God brother of mine, and he was telling me, the word fishing came. I don't know, someone spoke about fishing. And he told me, did you know, Maharaj, that I don't remember even in which book it was, but it is described in Golok Vrindavan, Krishna does fishing. but the fishes are not getting hurt. So I was like, I mean, this is a weird level of detail. This is too much. I mean, go to another tradition and tell them like that you know that actually our God, he fishes in the spiritual world, but without damaging the fishes. It's like, how do you get to that degree of specificity? That's too much. I mean, that's beautiful, but it's like lots of details. So again, my point is, the more detailed that description is, the more detailed the service necessity will be. Mm-hmm. Do you follow? So the more prepared we have to be for dealing with that specificity. Mm-hmm. There is some price, some commitment with that level of detail. Mm-hmm. And of course, the more we are ready to serve in that moment of necessity, as our acharyas mentioned, the highest remuneration will come for us. Mm-hmm. And the highest remuneration is to be able to... Prima Bhakti. Yeah. And what's Prema Bhakti? Once someone asked that to Srila Sira Maharaj, what's Prem? And he said, that you will receive unlimited energy to increase your service. like making the point, it's not something that, oh, finally something will come so I can catch it and relish for myself. Quite. No, Bhakti Rasa is not an object of our enjoyment, if you will. So the highest remuneration of service is service. When someone asked Srila Prabhupada, what's the goal of chanting Hare Krishna? He replied like in the most innocent and natural way, that you will be able to chant more Hare Krishna. Like, I mean, what else? Bhaktiya sanjataya bhaktiya. Bhakti comes from bhakti and goes to bhakti. No, we don't look for anything else. So, but again, this important point of identifying ourselves with the necessity of service, that's a very nice point. I remember always Bhaktivinoda Thakur making this point when he said, I would like to leave my body in Kurukshetra. Mm-hmm. Which was a pretty like, wow, why Kurukshetra? And generally, this place in Vrindavan, that place in Vrindavan, okay, Mayapur, Navadvipur, Kurukshetra. And the point, of course, it's interesting because he say that, but he never made any practical arrangements for that to happen. And he could make that. He was able to do that. So he wants to make a point by saying that. He was not literally saying that. And which was the point, as you know, Kurukshetra, one of the things that happened there before the Gita, Krishna's meeting with the gopis, and Radha's meeting with Krishna at one point. And Krishna is saying, after a century of separation, and try to imagine that as much as you can. And Krishna is saying, we can join again. And she's saying in brief words, but where is the peak of feather? Where is Yamuna? Where is Vrindavan? Where are you? Because you are Krishna, but my Krishna is Braja Krishna, Shirada is saying. So without Braj, where is Braja Krishna? So where are you? So Bhaktivinoda Thakur will say, Radha is next to Krishna, as close as you can get after such a separation, but for some reason, the union cannot happen. So she is in the highest need of service at that moment. So that's why Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, I want to die in Kurukshetra and serve Sri Radha for eternity in that moment of her highest need. That was the point he was wanting to make, was saying, I want to die in Kurukshetra. I want to enter into that portal, into that eternal moment, when she's in the greatest necessity, and just throw myself in service for eternity, for satisfying that necessity. So, as that happens to Radha, that happens to Mahaprabhu. Krishna in his greatest necessity, experiencing Radha Bhav, which implies her necessity in separation from Krishna. So, if Mahaprabhu is the most vulnerable face of the Absolute and the most volcanic, he's the most needy, if you want, in that sense as well. And so the service to him will be the most necessary if you play out the equation. So I'd like to get closer to my conclusion. Not conclude, but get closer. Speaking some brief words in this connection, also in connection to what Karuna seemed to say yesterday, a few words only, about Gadadhar Pandit, which is again a whole different series of lectures, actually, to do justice, but brief words. Because again, we speak about Mahaprabhu, Krishna, in this great moment of necessity, experiencing Radha Bhava, which is totally like chamatkar-like. But we also hear that although Mahaprabhu is Krishna tasting Radha Bhava, Radha is still there in Gaur Lila in the form of Gadadhar Pandit. So who is Gadadhar? It's Radha in Gaur Lila giving himself, herself, fully, so Krishna as Mahaprabhu can be successful in his laboratory, in his project. So in one sense we say Mahaprabhu is Mahavadanja, Mahaprabhu is the most generous personality, but we could say because that's possible only because Gadadhar is Sri Radha in her most generous moment, giving herself to Krishna, so he can be the most generous. You follow? You follow the idea? No. Okay. Tell me. So I repeat. No problem.
Just that part.
Yeah. So we say Mahaprabhu is the most generous personality.
Yes.
He's given what no other else was given. But what he's given, he received that from someone else. Now Krishna is given something that he received from Sri Radha. So Mahaprabhu is the most generous because Radha's Gadadhar is the most generous, given, emptying, if you will, her heart so Mahaprabhu can be filled and give that to others. So that's an interesting idea. Which is not downplaying the role of Mahaprabhu, but just extolling the background of the whole thing. So there is something very interesting in this connection, because those who have some affinity for serving, for example, Radharani in Radha Dasyam in Vrindavan, they will be able to serve. I mean, I know this is not the most introductory topic, so I to begin with, I beg your forgiveness. But I mean, he asked me to speak about that, just in case. So. He's the boss here, so better you go to him at the end of the story. So bear with me if some points are too much or you think you cannot follow. At least I hope one thing in the whole lecture reach your heart. If that happened, all the other stuff, no problem. Everything is justified, no? 2 hours waiting for Prashad here and tolerating me, it's justified, no problem. So if you have an affinity towards Radha Bhav, which is some we call Radha Dasyam, it's a form of Dasyam, in Braja Lila, we will able to serve that. We will be able to serve Radha Dasyam in Gaur Lila, because in Gaur Lila we will serve Mahaprabhu in Dasya, but Mahaprabhu will be in Radha Bhav. So rendering Dasya to Mahaprabhu's Radha Bhav is a form of Radha Dasyam. Follow. It's not out of the picture. That's my point. But also there is a second form of Radha Dasyam, which is serving Gadadhar Pandit in the Gaur Lila, emptying himself so Mahaprabhu can taste Radha Dasyam. It's another form of serving Radha directly. No? Serving Gadadhar will be Radha Dasyam in Gaur Lila, and serving Mahaprabhu will be serving Radha Bhava Dasyam in Gaur Lila. So two by the price of one. Again, another form of that in Gaur Lila.
Now we've got three for one.
Yeah, I lost counting now. It's too much. Because remember, Mahaprabhu is Krishna in the moment of his great necessity, just receiving this. But Radha, I mean, if Krishna is in the moment of his greatest necessity in Gaur Lila, that means Radha is in the moment of her greatest necessity, because Krishna's necessity is her necessity. So Shirada doesn't have a separate sense of necessity. You follow? I don't have a necessity separate from my beloved. So if Krishna has this necessity, his necessity becomes mine. That's how Radha will think. So if Krishna has this necessity as Gaur, his necessity becomes mine. So she will be in such a necessity, trying to provide that. So Gadadhar Pandit is Radha herself, emptying herself out so Krishna can be successful. No? Sometimes poetically it has been said that Krishna's Mahaprabhu is plundering the heart of Gadadhar Pandit and taking all that bhav so he can be successful in the Leela. So my point with this also is the Dasyam that we are invited to offer in Gaur Leela for eternity is not just like some inferior thing because it's Dasya and it's not Madhurya. No, because the Madhurya in our school mainly is Radha Dasyam. So it's a form of Dasyam. And if you play out the implications of the Dasyam in Gaur Lila, it's connected with this Radha Dasyam as well. By serving Gadadhar, by serving Mahaprabhu in Radha Bhava. So, so Krishna is Swayam Bhagavan, and Mahaprabhu is Swayam Bhagavan, if you will, by the grace of Sri Radha. Basically, I would say. So, some brief words in conclusion, and I don't know if there are questions. There are questions, and maybe the question is, where is Prasad? And it's okay, we will follow after that question. But as I mentioned, by the grace of Pandit Gadadhar, Mahaprabhu can be successful in the Leela, can know himself through her eyes. No? In the Shruti, they say, Jasmim bhiknyate sarvamivam bhiknyatam bhavati. By knowing him, you know everything, but Krishna has his own version. It's by knowing her, I'll know everything. No, he has his own sutra, and that happens again by the grace of Gadadhar Pandit. And Krishna can become all that he can be. Again, he has his own potential, if you will. If you want to speak nowadays, the term metta is used for the metaverse. Use this term. Sorry to invoke that. But there's a place for that in transcendence. No? So in one sense, when we say Krishna is Tu Bhagavan Swayam, we're actually saying Krishna is a meta-god. Meta-god means a god composed of what is most important about all other features of the divinity. No? And more is mentioned there. So in that case, Mahaprabhu is meta-Krishna, or meta-meta-god, if you will. But again, this is possible only because of Radha's grace in the form of Gadadhar Pandit. Which again, as I said yesterday, Gadadhar Pandit is the most cryptic, obscure, mysterious personality basically in the whole Gaur Lila. Yeah. If you go through Chaitanya Charitamrita, you can count with the fingers of one or two hands how many times Gadadhar is mentioned. But if you properly understand his role, that's the most important person in the whole Gaur Lila. Because without him, there's no Gaur Lila, there's success to Gaur Lila. We will need another Leela to make success. So somehow Krishna acquires the required adhikar, if you want to put in those terms, to be successful in Gaur-lila. No? Bhagavatam is saying, Svesvedi kari janista saguna parikirtita. Very nice verse. It says, to ascertain one's adhikar, that's real beauty. Mm-hmm. And that applies to us as sadhakas, for sure. That verse speaking to us, not to Mahaprabhu, but it can apply us. So to know where you are, that's really nice. To try to be where you are not, that's very unbecoming. We call sahaja. Or to try to remain in a place you should no longer remain. That's another form of sahaja, as we say the other day. And sahaja means you are, how do you say? Rushing, no? Where angels fear to tread. No? You want to go to places too high for you, or you are in a place where you should no longer be. You should grow, but you insist into remaining a kindergarten Vaishnava. That's another form of wanting the thing cheap. You follow my point?
Yes. Wow.
We generally do not speak about that as sahaja, but that's the other version of it. No? Instead of going quicker to the high realms, wanting to insist on remaining a toddler for eternity when it's no longer time for that. So it's okay, you have a time in your life for using the pacifier, and it's beautiful. No? We can see still Charu doing that and so on. But for Gaur Chanda, that's not beautiful anymore. And what to speak for now, Rasa? Imagine if Daddy comes with a passive. Oh my God! It's like that shouldn't be happening. I mean, you should be ready for something else. So, Svesvedi Kari Janista means to acknowledge where you are with full integrity and honesty. That's real beauty. That's a real virtue. So Krishna himself recognizes in his Krishna Lila, I'm here, but I want to taste this other thing. So I need to upgrade my adhikar so I can relish Radhava, basically. Yeah, I have to actualize my potential, basically, interestingly. So again, Sri Radha is allowing that to happen by facilitating her heart and halo. Radhava Dhyuti Suvalitam Nomi Krishna Sarupam. So we could say Mahaprabhu is how to say, the solution to Krishna's lack of adhikar. So Krishna wants to acquire that adhikar, and he starts to inquire how to be successful in Radhabhava. And that comes from Radha's grace. That's why Mahaprabhu is taking daily Bhagavatam class from Gadadhar Pandit. I mean, he's going to learn from Radha. I mean, try to imagine, I invite you to a Bhagavatam class. Who's giving the class? Sri Radha. Who's in the audience? Krishna. And they are speaking Bhagavatam, which is... Bhagavatam is not so much a book about Krishna as it is a book about love for Krishna. In Vishnu Purana, you have even more information about Krishna, technically speaking. But about the feeling of what Krishna... That's Bhagavatam. So Mahaprabhu is Krishna learning about what's love for Krishna from, of course, the founding acharya, if you will, in his own project, no, Sri Radha, his guru. So in this way, Krishna is becoming a sadhaka as Mahaprabhu to take lessons, attain his ultimate perfection as Mahaprabhu. And Gadadhar is instructing on a daily basis through these Bhagavatam classes. But interestingly, I'm getting to conclusion, please believe me. I'm trying to convince myself, maybe only. Please believe me, Padmanabha Maharaj. You are almost getting closer. Nobody else believes you, but what to do? You have to begin somewhere. So, at one point of his lila, we see that Mahaprabhu is taking classes from Gadadhar, and Mahaprabhu is growing in his experience of Radhabhava, making that more and more systematic, till he enters into the Gambhira for the last 12 years. At that point, there are no more Bhagavatam classes. And Gadadhar totally disappears from this scene. Why? Because Mahaprabhu now is mature enough in that experience. And Gadadhar, it's like the example sometimes given is like if a father is teaching his child to ride bicycle. No?
I just had the image of, yeah.
Okay. We have to relate emotionally with the lila, so it's okay, it's good. So the child is in the bicycle. In the beginning, the bicycle has these two extra wheels. How do you call them?
Training
wheels. So you don't need the father there, you won't fall, but just the father is there just like the moral support, if you will. So you are riding. Eventually, when you are ready, he will take out the wheels, those wheels, and he will support you. And eventually, he will leave you alone, and you can do it. And he will follow closely. But at one point, he's okay. He will disappear. He understands. Now you need to do it by yourself. You don't even need to have me close. That would be a disturbance. Just be free, if you will. So at that point, when Gadadhar Pandit realizes that he reached that moment, he's riding Radha Bab bicycle. He's doing very nicely his homework in the Gambira. He disappears into the background and remains at Tota Gopina. So, and the point is, at the end of the Gaur Lila, at the end of the Gaur Lila, Chaitanya Charitamrita, the last chapter of the Antya Lila is Sikshastakam. And when the last verse of Sikshastakam is mentioned, as Lisha Bapadaratam Pinastuma, and so on, Krishna Das Kavira said, this verse was spoken by Sri Radha. So he kind of makes the point, Mahaprabhu made it. He was successful. So at that point, Mahaprabhu is bathing in the glory of tasting Radha Bhav, and all of us are Gaur Haribo, glorifying that. But if properly understood, the disappearance of Gadadhar Pandit when nobody is speaking about him, that's even more glorious. Properly understood, Gadadhar's glory outshines Mahaprabhu. You follow my point? Because he, she, is facilitating all that to happen. So that's Sri Radha serving Krishna in this other lila, in the moments of her greatest necessity, which was his greatest necessity. So in this way, just to conclude, in the same way as Krishna is, Mahaprabhu is Krishna with his increased adhikar, we as sadhakas, we need to increase our adhikar to serve Krishna with upgraded adhikar. We have to follow his footsteps. And for that we have to learn some of these lessons we have shared today. You know, we said the other day, how to learn to go beyond the script, not beyond the scripture, but beyond the script. How to actualize our potential, how to see ourselves in terms of our brightest future, not to over-identify with our present limitations, how to be ourselves passionate scientists in our devotional bhakti project, in our own laboratory, how I can grow as a sadhak, how to allow vulnerability to empower my journey, basically. And if we engage in sadhana with that spirit, I mean, we'll find a deeper purpose, for sure, on a daily basis, to our life, to our practice. And even we will able to connect, again, with a deeper sense of purpose that happens in the lila, and serve the necessity that the lila is trying to give to us, an identity of service there. So, anyhow, some words I want to share today regarding Gaur Lila, Gaur Tattva, diving into Gaur Lila. So I hope you have not drowned in the whole description. You keep floating somewhere there. So they have questions. They are taking turns to see. They are gambling. They are just gambling.
Maharaj, you mentioned that one of Krishna's big problems is that he doesn't feel that he's sufficiently reciprocating with his devotees. Right, and then there's this, you gave the example of from ninth canto where he's speaking to Durvasa Muni, this is Vishnu speaking. He's feeling, my devotees are my heart, I'm controlled by my devotees. We have the famous example of Krishna speaking to the gopis directly in Apariham, that he feels like he can't reciprocate with them specifically. Is this feeling of insufficient reciprocation present with, like, to what degree of bhakti is that present? Is it a degree with, like, the Dwarkavasis, the Mathuravasis, or is it only present with the Brajvasis, or only the gopis? But this feeling of insufficient reciprocation on Krishna's end, who is that present with?
Yeah, I will say that it's present as long as there is bhakti in the equation. Krishna will feel that to one degree or another. It's not that he's only feeling that with Sri Radha or with the gopis, and with the rest I can reciprocate accordingly, or something like this. Of course, he's saying that in the Gita. He's saying, Yayatamam prapadinte tam sataiva bhajamyaham. According to how you approach me, I reciprocate. he's making that point, like, to ensure, I mean, you have to understand also the context of the statement and so on. And of course, the idea is here, Krishna is not, like, ungrateful, or like, you give him 100% and he will throw you 50% or something. So he reciprocates according to how you approach, but in his subjective humility, if your approach is that sincere, he will feel, I'm not giving enough. He won't be feeling you are not giving enough. He's feeling, I'm not giving enough. And you should be feeling, I am not giving enough. Each one has to do their part. No, you shouldn't say to Krishna, you are not giving enough. And Krishna will tell you, you are not giving enough. That's not how it works. But Krishna is feeling, I'm not giving enough. And of course, if you hear that, you will feel humble and say, no, I'm not giving enough. And there starts the struggle, the loving competition. I'm not giving enough. No, I'm not giving enough. No. There's place for that, no? In a real way. No, it's not just to make a show out of that, because also you can make a show, like we always say, this disciple that came to Srila Prabhupada once said, Srila Prabhupada, I am the most falling of your disciples. And Prabhupada said, you are not the most anything. No? You want to be the most something. No? If I cannot be the most greatest, I want to be the most fallen. Give me the most something title. But if there's real feeling, there's place for that. So yeah, Krishna reciprocates accordingly. The Bhagavad Gita says, means, it doesn't mean he feels he reciprocates accordingly. I mean, he says that in the Gita on one level, like, yeah, making the point, God is, how to say, corresponding proportionately to the degree of your surrender. Like, implying also, you have to do your part. Uh-huh. No? You have to take that section in the verse. It's not only, oh, how nice, Krishna will reciprocate accordingly. Yeah, accordingly, which means according to how you give yourself to him. So the question is, how much I'm giving myself to him? Because I have to do my homework as well. Huh? I don't want to expect, I'll give myself 1%, and Krishna is so merciful that he will give me 108%, and I'll follow the footsteps of Putana and attain Kripa Siddhi. That's not our club, as we told you. So I would say that Krishna, even as you mentioned, Bhagavan Narayan in the Bhagavatam is kind of expressing that mood. That's not Krishna in Vrindavan. So he feels that even in Vaikuntha. So the idea is what to speak of, how that plays out in the Braj.
So in one sense, he does reciprocate with the Braja Gopis, but mm-hmm. That's like a very clear instance where he's expressing this inner feeling that he's having that I'm not, because he does reciprocate with them. He's with them, he's, you know, spending time with them.
Yeah, yeah.
That's his whole, like, project in Braj.
Yeah.
But he's expressing his feeling of...
Yeah, one thing is that you reciprocate, another thing is you feel, I'm not reciprocating enough. There are two different things. I may reciprocate, but you may feel, like with Sri Guru. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to reciprocate. You may say, you, Maharaj, you are reciprocating. Yes, but I don't feel I'm reciprocated enough. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure I will ever feel that. Mm. I hope I will never feel that. That's an eternal debt.
Yeah.
That's the only way you can get free from the karmic debt. To attain another type of debt. That you realize, I will never be able to pay this one. I need eternity for trying to do something about it. Mm. And nonetheless, I will never be able to pay that. Because if I'm able to pay that, the whole ill is over.
Yeah.
But everyone is keeping, trying to reciprocate with each other. And everyone is feeling in their humility, I'm not giving enough. Mm-hmm. No? Yashoda, Nanda, Raktak, Patrak, Subhal, Sridham, Madhu, Mangala, Lita, Visakha, Rupa, Manjari, Krishna. It's not that someone is thinking, I'm giving everything I can.
You're welcome.
Because again, that's not the prospect of that's not the prospect of Prem. Prem is, there's no limit to how much you can progress and grow and love mm-hmm. and give. So they have a real, they are there. I mean, they are in a planet made of Prem, so they know what they're talking about. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that will make full sense when we are there, basically. Now we are giving some notions so we can kind of, okay, yes, we are processing that, ruminating, but yeah. Hopefully that's enough inspiration so we apply ourselves in sadhana and receive the necessary mercy to reach there.
Given so much that now you owe me something, and then you're like, oh, like I want to be able to give without like feeling resentment or like now Krishna owes me something. Mm-hmm. I feel like I hit that when I go past my comfort zone too far. Or mm-hmm. something like that.
Welcome to the club. You're not alone in the equation. And of course, when we say about going our comfort zone, outside of the comfort zone too much, of course, I'm not promoting that either. As we spoke the other day, no? Be careful with the two equations. No? One extreme, you have neurosis. The other extreme, you have complacency.
Yeah.
You want a middle point between the two. If you go too much outside of the comfort zone, you may get neurotic. Too much. If you don't go at all outside of your comfort zone, you get complacent. Another form of neurosis. So you want the middle point. So we need to recalibrate that on a daily basis, because what today is an extreme, tomorrow may be middle point. Mm. It's constant readjustment. It's not that, okay, this is the formula for the next 30 years. No. Bhaktivinoda Thakur will say, today's perfection is tomorrow's imperfection. Mm-hmm. So today you reach this point, tomorrow recalibrate. Not neurotic, not like Prabhupada, I distributed 100 books, okay, tomorrow 200. No? He didn't say tomorrow 2 million, because he knew that would be too much, that would be neurosis. But 200, that's possible, and it was possible. Mm-hmm. Eventually 2 million, but So regarding this idea of reaching the wall and expecting something from Krishna, of course, we have to learn from those experiences, because of course we know we shouldn't feel, the idea is not to feel like that, because we know that, I mean, I'm receiving more things than what I can appreciate actually, you know? So I'm receiving more things than what I'm actually aware of, that's a fact. So my sadhana is basically about extending my awareness of all that already came. So I'm not just even asking Krishna, send me mercy, but allow me to appreciate the mercy that you already sent. Yeah. I'm asking mercy for that, if you will. Give me the mercy so I can appreciate the mercy that has already come. Because if not, you ask for more mercy, but you don't know what to do with the mercy that is already there. And Krishna said, but I already sent you three tons of mercy, and you have them from who knows where. And sometimes even Krishna will send mercy and we don't have the eye to read, to appreciate mercy. And we'll feel, oh, this problem is coming. And you start to pray Krishna for mercy. And Krishna said, help me from this problem. He said, no, that was my reply to your previous prayer, asking mercy. That was my mercy. And you're asking me mercy to get rid of my previous mercy? If I reply to that, there will be a next prayer that you will get, ask me to get rid of this other. So it doesn't work like that. So we also need to understand what's mercy, because sometimes we have an idealized idea. This should be mercy. That's delicate, because you are already praying to Krishna, telling him, you should give me this particular type of result in this packaging in this particular moment. And Krishna will say, if you are so smart and you know everything that much, why do you need me at all? Why can't you figure out your whole situation? So we should be open when we pray for mercy. May it come in the way it needs to come. And probably it's not in the way I think it will come. And I have to be open to that. Love moves in a crooked way. Crooked way means unexpected, unpredictable. No? The snake doesn't move like straight line. So Krishna may play the flute here. No? My Guru Maharaj likes to give that example with the Bhagavad Gita verse Sarvadharmam Parityajat, and Prabhupada Bhaktisiddhanta will say that's a clarion call of Krishna playing flute and calling us. So Krishna plays the flute and you run in one direction. Oh, Krishna's there. And when you get there, flute is sounding there. And you will say, oh my gosh, but I have to go through so many obstacles to reach this spot. And now this whimsical guy is playing the flute there. I'm tired of running. I go back home. Gopis, that's not Gopi standard. They're not tired. They were just running there and running. And they will not say, Krishna, please for a moment, just stop being crooked. And he'll say, I mean, I'm crooked by nature. Trivanga Lalita. Everything about me is crooked. No? And love is crooked. So love moves in a crooked way. So the point is, we have to be aware of those things. And if we feel I'm demanding something from Krishna. Well, that's an opportunity to increase our humility and realize there's still some way to go to unconditional love. Again, not to torture myself, but just to sve sve adhikari janista, acknowledge my present adhikar, where I am and where I want to be. These two things need to be in place. Not only where I want to be, but where I am. And not only where I am, but where I want to be. Which is the path in between. So, anyhow. Those questions require separate lectures, but just some brief ideas.
You had your hand up.
So Krishna, because he felt it so indebted to Radha, wanted to try to get her mood, and then took the form of Mahaprabhu. Now I was when you concluded your lecture, I was thinking, now Mahaprabhu is indebted to Gadadhar. So how is, I know that it's an ever-increasing debt. So how is that going to be paid? It seems like Krishna is defeated all the time.
Yeah, that's why you say Jai Radhe. As Gaudiyas, that's our motto, Jai Radhe. Jai means victory. Jayashri, that's the name of Sri Radha, Jayashri. She who is victorious over we know whom. And Krishna is celebrating that in Gaur Lila eternally. There is an eternal situation in which Krishna is eternally telling to the world, I am defeated, I am defeated, I am defeated. And Kijai for that. I mean, that's why we say Kijai, as he said the other day, so many times a day. Shri Gurudev Kijai, this Kijai, because we want to be defeated by them. Conquered. Not defeated in that sense, by their affection, conquered. So, and of course, again, Gaur Lila is eternal. So as Mahaprabhu, I mean, there is a constant attempt of further reciprocation among each other. It's not that they are ungrateful. And those two eternal realities are there, Krishna Lila, Gaur Lila, in which, again, these two sides are trying to perpetually repay each other and finding difficulty in doing so, and they are in further need. We need further assistance here. So they will say, hey, Karuna Sindhu, we need you. So we can try to repay in a better way, and so on. So we have some purpose there for eternity. That's the dynamics of Lila, how divine play works, basically. Okay, I'm saying some devotees bite in the hand of others, so they must be hungry. I don't want you to stop being vegetarian, although this vegetarian flesh, but there's very nice
plant-based.
Yeah, plant-based. So there's Mahaprasad waiting for you all, so I think we can put our discussion to rest here today, and these days, in a few days, we will meet it again. Srila Gurudev ki jai, Sriman Mahaprabhu ki jai, Sri Harinam Sankirtan ki jai, Sri Sri Gaur Nityananda ki jai, Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki jai, Gaur Sriman.